Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks, Pavan, Marco, and Ganesh for having me. And yes, you do get back-to-back AT&T presentations. But if anything, this shows how ISAC is now moved from an idea or a concept to actually something that operators are seriously thinking about how to make it happen, how potentially to deploy it, and then how to operationalize it. So I'll try not to repeat what Brian said, but I will focus mostly on, rather than the what, I will focus on how do we get there? How do we have ISAC and 5G and evolve it into the 6G networks that we are deploying? All right, so this works. So, you know, ISAC actually transforms our network into a sensor. So it's a fundamental shift on how we look at networks. We usually build networks to communicate, and now we are building our networks to sense or perceive the environment and potentially act on it. This is not to say that we are going to add a radar or a dedicated infrastructure next to the infrastructure that we are already deploying or have already deployed. This is going to be integrated in the RAN. And it will enable new services, new monetization opportunities, but it will also be able to improve the network performance. So sensing-aided communication is something that is also being very closely looked at from the perspective of, you know, beam management, interference management, resilience, etc. And this is very important from an operator perspective. And also, we're doing all of this on our existing infrastructure. That's the promise of ISAC. So technically, with a very low incremental cost. So this is great. But then to make this sure that this happens, we believe there are, you know, important enablers that we need to make sure are in place. The first one is governance. This is a new class of data for sensing. So it matters to make sure that this data is transported right within our end-to-end network and to the outside. So you're talking security, you're talking privacy, authorization, exposure control. This is very important. And Brian, you know, very well covered it in his presentation. The other important aspect is architecture. And basically, this is an end-to-end system that we are building. This is a solution that is not PHY or physical layer enhancements or scheduler enhancements on top of what we have in communication to enable integrated sensing and communication. We are looking at it end-to-end. And for that, open architecture becomes very critical. And then ORAN basically is a natural place for us to have this conversation now as we start thinking about that from an ORAN perspective. So we're talking about an open architecture to be able to enable multi-vendor innovation. We're talking about different sensing orchestration and optimization that we can do. We're talking also about, you know, the standardized interfaces to be able to transport the sensing data across the different parts of our network, across the RAN and the core and the management systems. So this openness actually allows ISAC to be less siloed and more scalable, essentially. Then if we look at the use cases, and we have been, you know, looking at the progress of ISAC use cases for a few years now. 3GPP has a whole huge list of use cases that they have identified in 5G Advanced, more of those in 6G. ETSI looked at even more of these use cases from an object detection and tracking perspective, from environment monitoring, motion, human health monitoring, etc. So the opportunity is real. There's no shortage of use cases, but then how do we make it happen? Then if we kind of sift through these use cases and see where do we start, right? And then we the whole industry started at this UAV detection and tracking, or object detection and tracking. UAV is the first use case that is being specified right now for 5G advanced, that is being looked at for most of the POCs, the field trials that we see across the world. And there's a reason for that. It's kind of the lowest hanging fruit. We know, we understand there's an LOS there that can be achieved through a network-based deployment. But you know, are there other use cases? And that question was asked to Brian as well. Well, there are other use cases that we you can look at, obviously. But all of these use cases basically are driven by business value and also technical maturity. So what we look at from a RAN perspective, or what we have picked up, is also related to traffic safety, vulnerable user control. Also public safety is very important. So intrusion detection, critical infrastructures, also, you know, use cases that FirstNet, for example, is very interested in, coordination of search and rescue efforts, etc. You get your industrial enterprise applications, indoors, but also environment reconstruction, sensing aided communication, becomes also very important and appealing. Then for all of these use cases, from an operator perspective, how do we make them happen? And the way we're looking at them is, we care about network-based modes, right? Like, so there are different ways you can do sensing. You can do sensing at the base station, at the user. You can do sensing with co-located TRPs, with co-located UEs, etc. From our perspective, what we care about mostly is a network-based sensing approach, right? And then from a TRP perspective, you can do it in a monostatic framework, but also you can do it from a bistatic framework, and you can involve the UE. The first use cases or products, roadmaps that are being looked at does not involve the UE, but also they either involve monostatic sensing or bistatic or multistatic sensing. And then here it becomes tricky, because from an operator perspective, what we care about is nationwide deployment. And then so if you look at a North America deployment, for example, you get very different types of environments. You get an urban environment, you get a suburban environment, you get a rural environment, right? So you have to make sensing work across all of those. So how do you make it happen? And it matters, right? Like how far the range matters. Also, how much you can guarantee line of sight to a one base station matters, then let alone guaranteeing line of sight to multiple base stations. So in Manhattan, that would be very different from, you know, somewhere in rural Arizona, for example. So, and then how do you involve the UE in a first type of deployment? Will your mobile be involved, your cell phone, or is it an operator deployed UE, for example, with more processing capability, with a known location? So all of these things we think need to be taken into account to achieve, you know, what we can do in sensing and scale it. Then there are other considerations that we need to understand from a technical perspective, right? So we have our physical limitations. We have our system limitations. You know, we have a certain bandwidth we're operating. We have a certain number of antennas that we're operating in. We have, you know, our system and how much we are willing to give up from communication to achieve that integration, right? And then the coherence time, et cetera. So we have your sensing resolution that you can achieve, an angular range, velocity, et cetera. You have your types of sensing targets. How do you detect a small drone is very different from detecting a large drone or a car or a pedestrian, et cetera. And then there are so many other considerations, right? Like sensing reference signal design, waveform design, UE capabilities, measurement reports, beamforming, power control, et cetera. All of these we need to overcome, and we need to figure out where to deploy them, what spectrum we have to deploy them in, and what makes sense where for all of these use cases. I'm doing bad on time, right? All right. So I wanted to flash our internal POC efforts on that. This is something that we value a lot as we understand this technology to be able to actually understand the feasibility of it. So we do have our internal POCs that we conduct to evaluate that. So we chose three types of targets: drones, vehicles, pedestrians, and a monostatic sensing framework, or UE to TRP, bistatic. And this is a suburban environment in Austin, Texas. That's where our lab is located. And we're trying to understand what can be achieved. Can we actually detect this sensing target? What are the limitations for our detection? What needs to be done to make that happen? So basically, I just want to flash a couple of results here. So we know, you know, with sensing, you are, if you look at the path gain, you are operating at a much lower path gain than if you're operating in communication, right? And then if you look at the difference between line of sight, non-line of sight for communication, and then if you look at it from a sensing perspective, it looks more, the slope looks like more like non-line of sight. So how do you recover that, right? So to recover that, you need integration with time and frequency. And if you want to integrate with time, then these are network time resources that you're taking away from communication. And similarly, if you're averaging in frequency, you're taking frequency resources for communication. How do you make that happen? How much averaging do you need to do? How do you design your reference signals around that? All of these you need to design, and that's, you know, subject of 6G design basically that is going on right now in 3GPP to be able to figure out actually what can be done for sensing to be able to detect these different types of target. And every target type is different, right? If you look at the car, it's very different from a human, very different from a small drone, from a large drone, etc. Then also it affects, you know, if a car is moving very fast, if a car is changing the way it's moving, or like a drone, similarly, if you don't have a specific pass in a straight line, a pedestrian moves its arms when it's moving. So how does that affect the way you detect? All of that matters, right? So then the localization accuracy of a vehicle looks very different from localization accuracy of a drone. Because of that. And a vehicle, for example, and ground targets become very critical because ground targets can go into non-line of sight very easily. And then non-line of sight to a monostatic base station, right? So, but then if it's a non-line of sight to multiple base stations, it becomes even more problematic. So you get positioning error for a vehicle that is even higher than a positioning error for a drone. Although the RCS of a vehicle is much larger. So some of these questions that we are trying to ask and find the solution for, right? So how can we make this happen in terms of making sure that we can do the sensing, but at the same time, minimizing the overhead to communication as much as we can, right? And then if you're talking about integration, CPI, et cetera, you also need to make sure that this is within the coherence time, you can integrate right, and that also matters if the vehicle is going fast, a pedestrian, a drone, etc. Right. So bringing it back to ORAN, what can ORAN do? I talked a lot about air interface problems, right? And these are stuff that we need to resolve. But then how do I actually make this happen from a network perspective, right? So can I make it happen in 5G? What will it take? Do I need to wait for 6G? Can I reuse the hardware that I already have? Do I need new hardware? And if so, what is it? And or can I do it with software, right? And then how do I eventually achieve an end-to-end sensing solution and end-to-end data management? Because this data needs to flow through the RU, through CU, DU, potentially through SMO to the core network, et cetera, right? And then what will ORAN role be and realizing this ISAC in an open architecture framework. So, and then if we bring it back to the ORAN architecture, right? How do we make sure that we can have multi-vendor interoperability for ORAN? And if we even go down, we start at the RU level, right? What sensing functions will the RU have? Will everything be at the DU? Because we need to operate at the IQ samples. Will the front hull need to be changed? Do we need to change the COS plane? Is it only an M-plane change? Do I need to touch only the O1 interface? So all of these questions need to be answered. And so far, we don't have a consensus on it, really, because we don't understand, you know, how do we solve this problem? And then this relates to, do I need new hardware or not? How much capability am I throwing in there? Am I only going to operate this and with very large antennas, very large bandwidths? Do I have the capability right now on the front hall to send all of this information at the DU? Is it better to actually do some of the processing at the RU? And, you know, with sensing, we have all of these, you know, different things that we need to do. We need to do pre-processing. We need to do the detection. We need to do the tracking, eventually fusion, multi-static fusion, and then multimodal fusion, right? So all of that we need to think about. And find, you know, solutions for. And then also the orchestration part. What would the SMO role be here? And then if we look at the data, how much do I care about the latency of the data and the sensitivity of the data? Do I want to terminate everything in the RAN? Or do I want to leave some processing to the core or somewhere else? So all of that we need to think about from an ORAN perspective, right? And eventually, what bring it back to what Brian talked about is it will also depend on the customer, right? And then we need to expose this data to the customer. Then where do I expose it from? And what do I expose? And will we do the fusion closer to the RAN, or do we do it at the core, or do we do it somewhere else? And what interfaces do I need to change to make that happen? And with that, I will conclude. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we can still take one question if
Yeah, I mean, excellent presentation. And can you go back to the, you know, the functional diagram with the ORU? So I wonder, I mean, how do you view, you know, the sensing data? I mean, according to this diagram, you know, it seems like AT&T understanding is sensing data is the you know, management data. It is an open question. So depends on, you know, how does 3GPP define? It could be something, you know, ORAN can do about it, or it should be. Unless, like, we change our name to ORAN Core Network, I mean, and then, you know, it might be we have less thing to do. I mean, it depends on, you know, how they define it. So that's an open question. So I want to hear your view.
Yeah. So, so if I understand your question correctly, you're talking about like the type of data that you're potentially sending from the RAN to the core network, and how does that look like, or to the SMO, and how does that look like, right? It's not clear that it's management data. You know, it can be. We need to still understand what role the SMO will play in control and in processing, right? So there are different, you know, streams or different types of data that you can send across or not, right? So you need to understand also if you want to terminate everything in the RAN.
Okay. I mean, definitely will impact on the frontal side. And, you know, in terms of where the, you know, the sensing information will be processed. And on top of that, you know, how much, which level of data we are going to, you know, deal with it. And it depends on that, you know, and we need to, you know, in the end of the day, we need to decide that, you know, whether this is management data or, you know, the user data.
It will depend on where you do the processing, like I mentioned, right? So basically, do you want to send IQ streams from the RU somewhere else? You know, that's a big question that needs to be answered. Right now, we don't, right? So then, if you want to do also all the processing in the RU, or you want to do some of it in the RU and some of it in the DU. So what we're saying is that these questions need to be answered.
Yeah, it needs to be answered in working group 4. Yeah. Okay, thank you.